John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drop?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is tie is this, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, March 27, 2013. Report shows escalating Israeli attacks against Palestinian journalists, while human rights groups warn of Israeli violations at the Gaza borders. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. The Palestinian Center for Development and Media Freedoms, MEDA, released on Wednesday the annual report on the violations against media freedom in Palestine during 2012. The conference was held at MEDA's headquarters in Ramallah. MEDA Center reported 238 violations against journalists and Palestinian media outlets during the past year. According to MEDA, the Israeli occupation forces has committed approximately 70% of the overall total with 164 violations, while different Palestinian sides committed 74 violations, the equivalent of 30% of the total violations. And in comparison with 2011, the violations have increased approximately about 11.5% in 32 violations. The report explained that media freedom status in Palestine had no promising signs since the start of year 2012. The report also noted that one of the Israeli violations resulted in the killing of three Palestinian journalists in the Gaza Strip during the latest Israeli military offensive targeting the coastal enclave in November 2012. Also on Wednesday, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, PCHR, announced that four Palestinians were killed and 66 others were injured in the buffer zone enforced by the Israeli army around the Gaza Strip since the ceasefire deal was reached back in November of last year. The center reported that among those 66 injured were 17 children. According to a PCHR report, after the implementation of the disengagement plan from the Gaza Strip in 2005, Israel has unilaterally and illegally implemented so-called buffer zone, an area off limits to Palestinians along the land and maritime borders of the Gaza Strip. PCHR noted that no one knows the exact area classified by Israel as a buffer zone and this policy is enforced usually through Israeli gunfire. And that's all for today from the IMENC News. This was the Wednesday, March 27th News Roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, Ghassan Barnoura.
Afghanistan, 26th of March. A 16-year-old boy stabbed and killed a foreign occupation soldier of unreported nationality in eastern Nangarhar province. He then escaped without harm to himself. That means he literally brought a knife to a gunfight and won. Afghanistan, 22nd of March. An American soldier was killed by an IED blast in Karabakh District, Ghazni Province, Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 26th of March. The British military is reporting the death of a British soldier from an insurgent attack in Nad Ali, Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 26th of March. At least 10 British troops were wounded in a probable suicide car bomb attack on their patrol base in Helmand Province. Insurgents followed up the detonation with small arms fire on the base in Nad Ali, one of the places British troops have been based during their time in country. Afghanistan, 27th of March. 8 suicide bombers stormed the headquarters of a special unit of the Afghan police in the eastern city of Jalalabad on Tuesday morning, killing 5 officers and wounding 4. The assault began around 5 a.m. when a car bomb exploded near the entry gate of the compound, said Major General Muhammad Sharif Khan, the police chief of Nangarhar province. The blast was followed by another car bomb just inside the gate, which cleared the way for the insurgents to enter with suicide vests and weapons. 5 civilians were also wounded in the assault, which ended shortly after 7 a.m. Afghanistan, 21st of March. A member of Afghanistan's government-backed militia program shot and killed 5 of his colleagues in a remote part of Baghdad province's Qadis district. Guantanamo Bay, ongoing. The hunger strike has grown, with 28 of the 166 undeclared prisoners of war now refusing to eat the shit they are no doubt being served. 10 are being force-fed while chained to chairs, using oversized tubes up their noses and down their throats in an excruciating procedure reminiscent of the making of foie gras. 3 more are in the base hospital on IV feeding. United States military, ongoing. Army Times published a report on the 27th of March stating that the annual Military Times poll found enlisted service members are significantly less happy than officers with their pay, leaders, promotion fairness, and quality of life. Is this any surprise given what 2 losing wars have done to American soldiers? Mr. Barack Obama, it's time to cut your losses and pull the plug. Bring all the troops home, ground all the drones today. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. On the 16th of March, D.C. anarchists marched in solidarity with people of Greece resisting a so-called bailout by the IMF.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Spanos, and we're visiting the U.S. on a northeastern anti-fascist solidarity tour, solidarity with Greece, solidarity against the struggle of the neo-Nazi party Golden Dawn, which won 18 seats in the last elections of the in Greek parliament. It's 18 seats out of 300 seats, so they've acquired 700 7 million euros because of that. So they have some level of state power, and they're a violent force.
Protesters marched first on the embassy of Greece, showing solidarity with those saying no to the Golden Dawn and the bailouts.
Must be stopped!
We don't need the state or cops!
Golden Dawn must be stopped!
We don't need the state or cops!
Golden Dawn must be stopped!
We don't need the state or cops!
We stand in solidarity with the workers of Greece. We condemn recent policies that jeopardize the well-being of Greek workers and are therefore presenting you with these demands. An end to austerity measures, reverse budget cuts that hurt Greek workers, reject concerns for creditors over citizens, and refuse demands of the IMF for further cuts. An end to the influence of Golden Dawn fascists, stop police cooperation with Golden Dawn, block fascist influence in Parliament, and extend additional protections to immigrants and other victims of violence. Support for workers' control of industry. Defend worker-run companies, including the Biomed factory in Thessaloniki. Stop wage and benefit cuts, end layoffs and taxes that hurt workers, and tax the corporations instead.
We're here because we want the government of Greece to know that for every anti-fascist who is tortured in jail, for every immigrant who is beaten in the streets, for every single right-wing politician who is so afraid, we are watching.
Next up, protesters, including visitors from Greece and D.C. area anarchists, marched from the Greek embassy to the German embassy. German bankers wrote many of the onerous restrictions in the Greek bailout that is causing so much misery and unemployment there, and nobody has forgotten that Germany occupied Greece during the Second World War.
While Greece has plunged deeper into economic misery as the impact of austerity measures has taken hold, the German economy has thrived. They've profited on the crisis. They've profited on the misery of the Greek people. They've profited by imposing extreme conditions on bailout funds to go to the Greek government to bail them out for loans that were taken out under a corrupt and inept political administration. They're forcing the Greeks to pay for a debt that they did not accrue.
No!
Yeah. So we have a message for the German ambassador, Peter Ammann. Dear Ambassador Peter Ammann, since the 2007 financial crisis, the German government, acting on behalf of Europe's 1%, has endorsed the imposition of brutal austerity on the Greek working class. In a perverse echo of the Versailles Treaty negotiations, the German government demanded deep cuts in public spending and massive layoffs in return for loans that would float the Greek government while it sought to repay debts accrued by corrupt and inept politicians.
No!
Austerity demanded by the German government has thrown Greece into a social and economic tailspin. Unemployment is now over 25%. The suicide rate has gone from the lowest to the highest in Europe, and hospitals can't afford to administer basic treatments. Rapidly increasing misery in Greece has opened the door to the rise of a neo-fascist right, bringing to mind the chilling decline of Germany's own Weimar Republic. Feeding on the poverty and despair wrought by German economic policy, the explicitly fascist Golden Dawn has begun carrying out attacks on immigrants, activists, and women on the streets of Greece, supported by close to 15% of a Greek public encouraged to scapegoat them for Greece's troubles.
A note bearing the demands of the protesters was slipped under the door of the German embassy, where it was picked up by one of the staffers. After that, protesters marched on the offices of the International Monetary Fund, one of the major sources of the so-called bailout of Greece, while stopping to storm the offices of the International Finance Corporation of the World Bank on the way.
The only loans being offered are by the IMF, which cannot be paid back anytime soon. IMF, stop pushing austerity! Stop putting conditions on loans that prevent the borrowing states from being able to pay back their debt! Pardon the loans and let the poor and working people of Greece be masters of their own destiny!
Yeah. Don't tell me there's no alternative to capitalism and its bailouts. You're listening right now to the song In the Shadow of Olympus, which is distributed with the free and open source Linux video game Zero AD. The song itself
is distributed under the Creative Commons Share Alike license, meaning anybody is free to reuse it as long as they indicate the source. Zero AD is distributed by Wildfire Games under the GPL or General Public License that is used with free and open source software such as Linux. It's got nothing in common with the pay-to-play world of Microsoft Gaming, and nothing in common with the pay-to-play world of the IMF, the World Bank, and the German banks. The week of March 16th to March 23rd was a global week of action against tar sands profiteers. These are corporations with vested financial interests in the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. One good example is Valero Energy, whose contract to buy massive amounts of diluted tar oil made the pipeline possible. Another is TD Bank, the largest single commercial lender to TransCanada's Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. Both of these were hit in actions here in D.C. as part of the week of action against tar sands profiteers. TD Bank got a nasty surprise when they showed up sometime before 7 a.m. on the 19th of March to open their branch at 15th and P Streets. Two activists were locked to a concrete-filled trash can known as a bear trap, weighing hundreds of pounds. Another was locked to the doors with a chain, closing them. All were part of Tar Sands Blockade Solidarity. There was no access to the 24-hour ATM. It took police until 8 a.m. to remove the blockade. To get the blockaders to let go, police had to let them leave without being arrested. Otherwise, their two-cycle gas-powered chop saw that they had brought would have filled the bank with smoke and the dust might have destroyed the ATM.
Oh, I get it. They're going to try to smoke them out. Yeah, but much of that thing smokes.
Cops hung white sheets over all windows from which the blockade could be seen after cutting the chain holding the first activist to the door and letting him go. They hooded the activists locked to the concreted trash can like detainees at Guantanamo Bay and threatened to saw them out at considerable risk of injuries.
They put the hoods on us.
They hooded you like at Guantanamo?
Right, to protect our faces from the dust, they said. But they put the hoods on us so we couldn't see each other anymore.
Jesus, hooded like Guantanamo. No wonder they ran this privacy screen.
Yeah, it was a little crazy.
The only thing is, TD Bank did not want the ugly publicity stemming from arrests, and sure as hell did not want that ATM trashed by dust from cutting through hundreds of pounds of concrete. It would have taken a half hour at most to saw out the barricade. Offered the chance to withdraw without arrest, they took it and departed, having sent a very strong message to TD Bank. By no means were DC pro-Earth activists finished with TD Bank. 2 days later, Rising Tide DC and Chesapeake Earth First were up at bat. Everyone gathered by the Canadian embassy, making the cops think the embassy was the objective. Louise Thundercloud of the Lakota Nation had this to say.
I'm going to say thank you.
You're going to say thank you.
To the Creator.
To the Creator.
For gathering us all here.
Gathering us all here.
I want to invite all indigenous
ancestors
of Canada and the United States to join us in this place
for we come with good intentions.
And I'm going to digress to my notes.
The march set out north, bound for the TD Bank on 7th Street, the same one that had their windows smashed the night before the inauguration. When protesters arrived, they made a serious effort to storm the building and several got inside. Cops pushed them back with considerable difficulty. Here's what things sounded like as protesters swarmed in on TD Bank.
Hey, ho, ho! Keystone Pipeline's got to go! Hey, hey!
My check!
TD Bank!
TD Bank!
Has provided the largest corporate loans!
For the Keystone XL Project!
They're the fourth largest shareholder!
In TransCanada!
Owning over 13 million shares!
TD Bank! Not so green! Tarzan's money is obscene! TD Bank! Not so green! Tarzan's money is obscene!
After departing from TD Bank, protesters descended on a ritzy office space rental building at 601 Pennsylvania Avenue. One of their tenants is Valero Energy, the number one planned buyer for tar sands oil from the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. Not expected there, they caught security with their pants down and stormed into the building, complete with a 15-foot or so pipeline made from cardboard and even one activist bike. Security went nuts. Cops got physical, but five activists sat down and refused to leave. Here's what things sounded like as opponents of the Keystone XL stormed 601 Pennsylvania Avenue targeting Valero.
Everybody in!
Things quickly heated up.
This is what your pipeline will do!
It took the cops another half an hour to remove the sit-in. The five activists were brought out in handcuffs to the cheers of the crowd. Finally, dancing protesters ripped the cardboard replica of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline to shreds. The Keystone XL just seems to get destroyed when it's around pro-Earth activists. At about the same time as the march on TD Bank and Valero, yet another group of activists staged an interfaith civil disobedience against the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline with another 15 arrests. DC area opponents of the Keystone XL still weren't done with tar sands funder TD Bank. On the morning of Saturday, the 23rd of March, protesters returned to the same branch of TD Bank that had been on the receiving end of Tuesday's concrete barrel blockade. This time it was climate first up at bat, with a third visit in 5 days to what organizers called Tar Dollar Bank. Security wasn't expecting them, and they were able to march unopposed into the outer lobby.
No pipeline! No tar sands! No more theft of indigenous land! No pipeline! No tar sands! No more theft of indigenous land! No pipeline! No tar sands!
When police finally pushed protesters back out the door, one of them had this to say.
TD Bank has over $650 million worth of shares in TransCanada. They're building the pipeline across our country from Canada to Texas. It's going to carry tar sands, the most carbon-intensive fuel on Earth. It has been said, tar sands, if we burn all the tar sands and continue business as usual with conventional oil, our climate will be out of control. That's not me saying that. That's James Hansen, premier climatologist.
Louise Thundercloud of the Lakota Nation had this to say.
In this conversation is why the human toll on indigenous people first is not even considered. The larger question is, or the larger issue is, the toll on human beings. But indigenous people told everyone many years ago when you first came here that if you harm us, you go next, and permanently.
It's like you're in a coal mine and a canary dies and they're like, oh, I don't care about the canary.
Speaking of canaries, TD Bank, also known as Tar Dollar Bank, may well be the canary in the coal mine for what is going to happen to those who invest in the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. They own over half $1 billion worth of shares in TransCanada, builder of the tar sands pipeline. As one of the protesters said, own the shares, share the blame. In one of the final acts of the week of action against tar sands profiteers, Climate First went on to a second branch of TD Bank, causing them too to empty out. Across the continent, there were something like 55 actions in all during the week of action against tar sands profiteers. Protesters in New York appeared on the 23rd of March at TD Bank branches as well. Yet more TD Bank protests took place in New Haven, Connecticut. In Salt Lake City, Utah residents blockaded a Chevron oil refinery and turned away six trucks. Valero's corporate headquarters in San Antonio, Texas was taken over and stormed the previous day, and TransCanada themselves also had offices stormed and shut down over the week. This is but the beginning. Hey, TD Bank and Valero, why don't you talk to Fortress Inc. about just how bad it can get when you do business with those animal experimenters at Huntington Life Sciences? TransCanada and the Keystone XL are rapidly becoming the Huntington Life Sciences of oil, and that means protests won't stop at the office but will show up at executives' homes the way things are going. With tar sands, there's no sleep for the wicked. On the 26th of March, there was yet another civil disobedience action against the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. This time, the target was Lionel Bassell's downtown Houston office. Lionel Bassell is a multinational corporation that owns oil and gas refineries all over the U.S. They're based in the Netherlands. They are another major investor in the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline and propose to triple their tar sands refining capability to use some of the output from the Keystone XL. The finished gasoline and other petroleum products would then be largely exported to China and other countries. A single activist from Tar Sands Blockade scaled a 50-foot flagpole with a banner reading, "Lionel Bassell, stay out of tar sands, no KXL." It took over an hour for the fire department to remove Perry Graham from the flagpole. At one point, someone counted 22 emergency vehicles at the scene. He was arrested, but tar sands profiteers have been warned again to get out of what is rapidly becoming the Huntington Life Sciences of oil. Tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday, the National Park Service and the U.S. Park Police will be shooting deer in Rock Creek because of who they are. They can talk all they want about sustainable populations and deer starvation, but the reality is this. They are killing deer to make the park safe for cars. While the meat will be donated to hunger programs, the hunters themselves will no doubt feast on burgers or other factory farm meat after they are done shooting 160-plus deer. The Park Service estimates less than 100 deer per square mile, when in D.C. surrounding the park, there are 500,000 of us in 100 square miles for 5,000 people per square mile or more. Who are we to criticize another species for overpopulation? If you disagree with slaughtering deer like there were buffalo under the guns of settlers and market hunters, there will be public protests on Thursday, March 28th, Friday, March 29th, and Saturday, the 30th of March. Gather at Military Road and Oregon Avenue beginning at 9 p.m. each night. Repeat, gather at Military Road and Oregon Avenue beginning at 9 p.m. each night. The shooting starts at 10 p.m., so do the air horns and other noise to warn the deer to stay out of the range of the park police and their guns. These roads will be closed to cars so the police can shoot the deer. Beach Drive north of Broad Branch Road, Ross Drive, Wise Road, Grant Road, Cherwell Drive, Joyce Road, Morrow Drive, and Bingham Road Northwest. Protest this tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday night. Gather at Military Road and Oregon Avenue beginning at 9 p.m. each night. Repeat, gather at Military Road and Oregon Avenue beginning at 9 p.m. each night. Stand up to the deer slaughter. On the 19th of March, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey Circus arrived in D.C. for the start of their three-venue tour, including the Verizon Center, George Mason University, and Baltimore. On the 19th, they paraded captive elephants through the streets. The cheering crowd was watching riders on the elephants up high. What they weren't paying attention to was a bunch of guys that looked like cops walking alongside the elephants with bullhooks. A bullhook, also known as an ankh, is a modified spear that has one spear point pointing out towards the elephant and a second point pointing sideways that can be used to slap with. It's kind of like a sharpened boat hook and is a tool by which trainers torture elephants. The only reason the trainers don't get slaughtered by the elephants they hit with these spears is because the elephants were conditioned as babies to think they couldn't resist abuse effectively. A baby elephant is chained up, can't break the chains. An adult elephant can break the chains with ease, but doesn't know it because of his experiences as a baby trying to break the chains. As Ringlings paraded captive elephants through the streets, a former elephant trainer who used to work for many circuses but turned his back on a career of abuse spoke out in front of the Verizon Center against Ringling's abuses and singled out their current head trainer, who he used to work for being a, quote, sadistic bastard.
You're saying the bull hooks have been classified as deadly weapons?
I'm saying the Anaheim Police Department has classified the bull hook as a deadly weapon. Yeah, but so when the Ringling shows up to the Hunt Center in Anaheim every year, they're using deadly weapons. Now, this is according to the Anaheim Police Force themselves. You cannot hold a bull hook at the Hunt Center because they classify it as deadly weapon, yet the Ringling here clearly uses deadly force on the elephants all the time. Elephants. I personally witnessed the elephants. I've been an elephant trainer myself. I've worked the elephants. Damn. And I can tell you flat out, these elephants are beaten on a routine basis. They're struck with cattle prods. It's messed up. If you did this to your dog, you'd be arrested in a heartbeat.
And deserve it, too.
I've worked with Joe Frisco. He saw the last guy that was walking into with elephants. It's my first time watched him fake tuberculosis test. I've watched him shock an elephant 170 times in quick succession. I've seen him use baseball bats on the elephants.
God.
So, yes.
So, when did you used to train them?
Is that?
When did you used to train? You said you used to train elephants?
Back in the early 2000s.
Early 2000s. And I take it
I worked with a couple different circuses.
Yeah, I think it was the abuse that got you out of it.
Yeah, I absolutely.
Which circuses did you work for?
I worked for Carson and Barnes. I worked for Clyde Reed Vehicle. I've got numerous friends in this circus. I personally worked for Joe Frisco, the head trainer right here. He's a sadistic bastard.
I'm certain that he is. No doubt he's not the only one. On the 22nd and 23rd of March, as the circus was playing at Verizon Center, a D.C. area animal rights group projected videos of animals being abused at circuses including Ringling Brothers, first on the walls of the Verizon Center, and then the next night on a movie screen where people coming out could see them. On the 23rd of March, one woman threatened to beat her young child for watching the video and yanked him away and threatened to beat the rest of her children. Here's what two witnesses had to say about it.
You said one of the parents threatened to beat her child for watching the video?
She didn't threaten to beat him. She yanked his ass up. She yanked him, and I mean, it was very forceful. It was, you know, really pitiful. And he was like about it, you know, 10-year-old.
Oh, man, so because she doesn't want her 10-year-old seeing animal abuse, she subjects him to child abuse.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a great example of an abuser. Yes. Because that's what it boils down to. You know, it's about freedom and equality for all living beings to not be abused. And if somebody is abusing animals, they definitely are going to abuse children. They're going to abuse other adults. They're going to abuse the elderly. Abuse is unconditional.
It's probably just as well I didn't see that because I had a soccer for doing that.
Well, you know, she was, I mean, did you see her?
She said.
Yeah, she went like this.
And she yelled at her like five other kids. If I swear, if you go down, I'm gonna beat the hell out of all y'all.
Jeez. With an attitude like that, the abusive mother could probably get herself a job working at Ringling Brothers as an animal trainer.